In this podcast, I'm going to answer the question of, does sound travel in wind, or how does sound travel in wind? This is another podcast from the universe of Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. My idea is not to just give you a simple, quick answer, which will get you through a test, but to develop a network of understanding belief, which will underpin a sort of a deeper understanding. So let's consider you're on a windy day and you shout. In a windy day, obviously, sound does travel because you can actually hear the person shout. And what I'm doing now is trying to plumb the depths of your natural experience. And if you can hear the sound, you can shout. What I'm trying to do is develop your understanding from your overall experiences. So one would think that the sound sounds the same to you as if I'm speaking to you. If I hear you upstream of the wind sound has been carried to me by the wind, I can actually hear it. The frequency doesn't change. In fact, if I shout into the wind, I suddenly don't get a higher pitch. So the frequency must stay the same. And there's that sensation of the sound being carried by the wind, and it actually having to, I suppose, travel a greater effective distance downwind for some reason as you shout downwind. So let's try and get a mental picture of what's going on. So if I drop a pebble into a still pond from a bridge, and I drop it in, it will have a series of rings radiating out from the outside. In actual fact, what happens there, let's go into the physics a little bit more, punches a plate of water downwards. So this pebble hits, and the shockwave as it hits the water goes downwards and then creates sort of a hemisphere of compressed water pushing down. As this pushes down, this creates a cavity. And when this stops, this process stops, the edge of the wall of the wall goes in, and the water rushes in from around the end of this shockwave, and this comes in and collapses and creates a drop of water rushing up. As the water rushes in, it focuses into the center. So where the stone drops, initially there's this shock wave, which is one ripple, then you will have the water cave back inwards, even though the wave is still travelling outwards, and it will rise up and drop the a little pedestal of water will rise up as the water rushes in, and its amplitude increases, it will rise up to a little point, and a little drop of water will be suspended in the air. And this will drop down again. And by the end of it, a single drop will produce several uniform oscillations to do more or less with the surface tension of the water as it comes out. So these will be, from where you drop it, there'll be a circular expanding circles, several expanding circles. So you should imagine that. And if you watch rain dropping down, you'll be able to see this all the time. So that's similar to just talking at the moment. My vocal cords set up an oscillation between my chest and my sinus, and this produces a sound wave. This oscillation produces a sound wave. This radiates out in a sphere on the surface of the water. It's a circle, and it's got it travels at a certain speed going away with a certain frequency. So we're to imagine those two aspects together. So again, just to stop, what I'm doing at the moment is giving an answer. I've given the answer, yes, that sound does travel in the wind. But what I'm now doing is building up on your experiences and expanding your experiences. So I've expanded your experience for sound heard in three dimensions to sound in two dimensions, because sound in two dimensions is pretty much similar to the way I will draw a sound wave on a blackboard. Now, let's go back to the pebble being dropped in the water, I can now have a stream, if you would like, traveling around. And what will happen is that when I drop the pebble into the water, the actual source of the sound will stay at the same point, but the water, which is streaming, flowing, say, underneath my bridge, will slowly and pull that ever-expanding circle away. And so what I look down, I'll see a series of circles, but the actual point of the circle, the centre of the circle, will be moving. And that centre of the circle moving will be the equivalent to the speed of the water flowing. So let's have a little look at what's going on here. So I've now converted a three-dimensional wave to a two-dimensional wave for you to imagine. And indeed, going downstream, the actual wavelength will increase. Yeah, it increases as it goes down. And it will actually decrease as those waves try to make it their way into the oncoming water. Now, this, you might think, is automatically, which means that the pitch of the wave or the frequency of the wave will be heard differently at different parts of the water. But this is, in fact, not true. The sound, as it is heard, is the number of wavefronts that you count passing your ear. So it's the number of waves that you feel. So upstream, the waves will be longer spaced, but they'll actually travel past the point more quickly because they've got the speed of the water adding to the speed of the wave as it's expanding. So although the waves are further spaced apart, they will actually travel past your point at a combined speed of the speed of the wave and the speed of the water. So even though it's a greater wavelength, it will be the same frequency. Now, if we go to a point upstream from your wave, so in the example is there's a wind and you're shouting into the wind and you're having someone listen to you, what will happen there is the waves will compress, but their speed, the effective speed of the wave, will be slower. So the person upstream will actually hear you less. Now, what's happened here is that the wave energy is actually being carried by the water upstream. So the wave energy is contained in the actual shape of the water, and that shape of the water is being pulled upstream. And it means that the sound can travel upstream. A few more interesting things is that there's more energy stored. So this is the wave will be carried downstream. Let's do a correction of that. If you look upstream, there'll be more high-frequency waves, and so the actual energy density shouting into the wave is greater. This is something to consider, but there'll be more wavelengths going to get there. So effectively, as far as the wave is concerned, it's got pretty much a reduced amplitude as it reaches you. So the wave, for a wave, three-dimensional wave, it's reducing in intensity due to the surface area of that energy, which is transmitted by the wave. And so it's reduced by a 1 on R squared. R is the distance from the source going out to the very, painting the surface. So R squared is proportional to the surface going out. So the intensity, as you move out, drops as 1 on R squared. So if something is 10 times further away, so the intensity of a sound wave 1 meter compared to 10 meters, the actual intensity of that sound wave has dropped by a factor of 100. So that's 10 squared. Or if it moves a kilometer away, it's down to a millionth of the sound. That's 1,000 times 1,000. Now, in two dimensionals, this happens to be proportional. The length of your intensity of your wave is proportional to the length of your perimeter. So the perimeter of a circle is 2 pi r. So the intensity of the wave drops by a factor of one on R. So in two dimensionals, the sound drops off as one on R. So if it's twice as far away, it's twice as quiet or a lower intensity. Now, there's a few factors in there because the actual sound wave intensity is proportional again to the square of the sound. We won't get into that, the intensity. However, let's get back into it. So what's actually in fact happening is as you are travelling upstream, as the wave is travelling upstream, it's actually diminishing more quickly because that circle is still increasing in size. It's increasing perimeter even though it's reducing in size because of it. So it is actually true. Shouting into the wind, in effect, if you are shouting towards an oncoming wind, your sound intensity tends to drop off. So a lot of you very abrupt people who don't really think about it will say, well, look, it's still a medium, still sound travels. But it is true that sound diminishes intensity a lot more when you're shouting into the wind, a lot less when you're shouting with the wind. That is, if you're standing 10 metres away, there are actually more wave fronts getting towards you, even though it's the same frequency, it's shorter wave fronts, and they're diminishing in size more as it's going out. So there's a lot of interesting physics in this. So let's get back to it again. The answer again is yes, sound does travel with the wind, travel in wind, but a sound wave spoken into the wind dies off more quickly as you're travelling along. So if you are, if you have two people, one person standing upwind of you, one person standing downwind, you will have to shout louder to get your same information to the person upwind because you are in effect shouting a greater distance, so to speak, as you go through. So that's a very interesting point. And I suppose another point, I'm not going into Doppler shifts, but because the medium is moving and you can't, and say if I'm counting a wavelength of one frequency per second, so I can count 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, it means the person upstream will also hear 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Person downstream will also hear that. So the frequency, you can work out that the frequency or the pitch of the sound will be the same because the length of the pitch times what you say is how much information there. So that person is still going to hear, you count to 10, upwind or downwind. So the frequency must be the same. So the intensity changes. So this is a bit of a complex thing to think about. Now, as I've said before, I'm trying to give a group a broad understanding rather than just a simple yes, let's move on to the next question in the quiz. What I want to do is cover just the topic of sound itself and compression waves and the science of waves. Now, for the science of waves, you've really got two things to get your mind around, and we're not going to cover this particular episode. One is the wave travelling in space, where space itself is the medium, or light travels without a medium, or light travels in space. But I'm going to talk about a medium, so sound. And a wave can travel in a medium, and if the medium moves, it has all these profound effects on waves and timing and things like that. So this is what we found, is that light does not depend on relative motion, therefore there is no medium. Or another way of thinking it is that space itself is a special sort of light-carrying medium. That's a bit of a heresy to say there. But let's get back to what a medium is. Now, a medium can be thought as a structure containing a periodic array of masses connected by a periodic array. That periodic array, each mass is connected by a spring. And it left the medium has something called an equilibrium position. So if I don't touch anything, there's no waves, those masses will be at equal points, and the springs will be at each equal tension. And that is called a uniform medium. So a medium, it refers to something which can be described by that mathematical model. We're going to talk a bit about the mathematical models. If I pick up one mass and I pull it away from its equilibrium position, I displace that medium. I displace it by a certain amount. That certain amount is called the amplitude. So if I then release it, it will actually oscillate back and forth, because it's got springs on either side, to that original point. So if I've got a mass, imagine I've got a mass between my two hands, a rubber band, and someone comes and pulls that mass between my two hands, that mass will oscillate back and forth. So when I pull it aside, that first time I pull it aside, that's the amplitude, and it will oscillate over twice the amplitude. And the number of times it does that per second is called the frequency, the number of times it does it per second. So you've got amplitude and frequency, and there's many ways I can move the mass. I can move the mass up and down. It will tend to go up and down between my two hands, or I can actually pull it towards my left hand, have someone pull it towards my left hand, it will oscillate between my left and right hand. Now, that's oscillating, but what you can imagine here is that that holding this mass, oscillating, I can feel the forces on my left and right hand. So what will happen is that if my left and right hand are also another mass, that oscillating mass will start to pump the next mass along. And that mass will start to pump the next mass along. And this fundamental thing of a displacement equaling a accelerating force of the mass and the next nearest neighbour, write the equations for this, I come up with a wave equation. And a displacement at one point in this symmetrical point will travel as two waves radiating out on either side, pretty much like your marble dropped into the water will have two waves radiating out on either side. But within that wave, the way that the left travelling wave or the right travelling wave, within that point you've got the material moving back and forth, pumping it and moving the next mass back and forth. And as that mass moves back and forth, it oscillates in such a way that it calms the mass that was pumping it with the energy. So that mass which came in to pump it gets calmed down, and this goes along and pumps the next mass. And as it pumps the next mass, that mass begins to oscillate and calms down, saying, thank you, I've got the energy. And if you look at it, the energy was at mass number 1, 2, 3, the energy travels along, and this is a wave travelling along. So that's the mathematics of wave propagation. So in a gas, you don't have the gas molecules are not connected by rubber bands. So if I lift up one gas molecule, it's not going to affect the other gas molecule. So if, imagine I cut my rubber bands, but instead of a ball, a very, very bouncy ball, and I lift the ball up, it's just going to be lifted up. But if I was able to push the ball, throw the ball against one hand, I'd feel the ball bounce between my two hands, juggle it between the two hands, and you can imagine the force is pushing on one way. And say if someone was next to me and had their hands there, the force of the ball hitting one hand would then hit another ball on the other hand and start the force going forward. And that is a compression wave. going forward. That's probably as best as I can explain it in this medium of a podcast. But let's get further on. For this to work, if I don't have rubber bands, I've got to have the rubber band in the ball itself for it to move in a gas. In a solid, yes, I can have I can build a solid out of a spring, a weight, but a gas, I've got to have the rubber bands on the ball itself. And indeed, this is what has happened. An atom is a nucleus covered with a rubber band of an electron. The electron in quantum mechanics is much larger than the neutron, or neutron and protons in the nucleus. So it's a tiny masses in the center, but the electron is a fuzzy ball. Again, in quantum mechanics, I'll just list this off for you to remember. Quantum mechanics has some of the following properties. There is no such thing as a surface for a quantum mechanical wave function. They never end with a complete wall. They softly rise and fall. And part of it, there is no surface, there's no restriction. There is a restriction for electrons moving to other electrons, but not quite. And electrons and nuclei can move through each other. They are charged, so the actual charged proton or nucleus sits in the center, but it's an ideal springy ball. So this is what happens in a sound wave. These springy balls move back and forth. Now let's talk about the springiness of atoms. If you put an atom in a room, and the room is at room temperature, so the walls are pushing the atom around, that atom will bounce forever. And this is, in fact, how we breathe. So let's do a summary of what's going on. We had the question, is that does sound travel into wind? And the answer is yes, but we looked at it a bit more and said, and this is the idea of an explanation. We developed the idea of going from three dimensions to two dimensions and looking at some of the properties of that sound. The sound does not change frequency in the wind, but it does change intensity in the wind. So going shouting upstream into the wind, it drops off as its intensity. As you shout into the wind, the intensity drops off as faster than a simple 1r². And if you shout downwind, the intensity of the sound is carried with the wind going into it. So we've looked at that. Then we've said, well, sound is a wave. Looked at that and actually looked at the mathematical model for it. This is a mass and spring. And writing that down, we have the way that a energy is actually transmitted from one oscillator to the next neighbour and so forth in a uniform way. So that's a travelling wave. And then finally we've said, well, look, a sound gas is different. Therefore, we've looked at the actual gas itself and had you a brief introduction into the quantum physics. So this is Peter Hill Explains. And the idea of this explanation is to paint a deeper picture of some of the ideas and get you to look at some of the ideas that you come through. On closing, I just want to point out that a fresh teacher who comes out and looks at a textbook and looks at a few things will give you a very simple, easy to take away explanation. Please go with them. But if you're in a different space, if you're a teacher or someone who really wants to know and expand their knowledge, by all means, do what the scientists do and slowly build your understanding in a complex web of concepts. And very soon, you'll understanding one thing will stretch across, not be a burden, but be a support for understanding a whole lot of other concepts. So, in the meantime, keep on doing science.